The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.
Hello there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 6th of June. I'm Maddie Plale and this week I'm joined by two top tipsters in Graham Rodway and Tom Park, and we really have got a treat for you. We're going to be looking back at Epsom's Derby meeting. So much high quality action. We saw two excellent winners of the Kazoo Oaks and Derby, as well as the Dash, and some pretty good supporting stars as well. Well, we also saw some market movers for the Ark, and they didn't last very long because as the weekend went on, more and more horses were cut for that end of season showpiece. So looking forward to telling you all about Vedeni, who won Sunday's Prix de Jockey Club very impressively. And I'm sure we'll get through some of the talking points from Epsom as well, the likes of fireworks and split screen races. So stick with us for the next 35 minutes or so. Let's start off with Epsom and with the first Group 1 on Friday, which was the Coronation Cup. It was won by Hookham. And sad news this morning that the horse may have won and run his final race. Owen Burrows, his trainer, saying he'd come home from Epsom and then suddenly the horse has sustained an injury which they weren't aware of immediately post-race. It really is a shame because this was a career best from Hookham, a first Group 1 for him, and he looked as if he'd have a hand to play in all the top middle distance races for the rest of the season, Parky.
Yeah, it was a really sparkling performance by him. This is the first I've heard of the news, and yeah, that's a massive blow. Really, really. I was thinking there was some really big prizes on him down the order this season. I mean, I thought that was as good a performance as, and we've seen some really good performances this weekend, but I was right up there. You can maybe argue that the quality was maybe a little bit below your standard Group 1 race, but yeah, big shame if we don't get to see him again. Because yeah, he's taken a while to come to the boil, really. I mean, he was very good at Ascot last year, and he kind of came along through the season last year, and obviously started his campaign in Britain this season with a really good performance. So yeah, fingers crossed. It's not as bad as they're saying, but it doesn't sound too good at the moment.
A Racing Post rating of 124, G-Rod, beat last year's winner in Pile Driver. And, of course, he's Baid's brother. So a really sort of solid and strong horse who's clearly still improving. He's going to be a big loss.
Yeah, a lot of time for Hookham in his career. I've always thought that he might make his mark at Group 1 level and was very pleased to see him do so on Friday, Maddie. I'm not sure I agree with 124. I don't think the Hookham's 124 horse personally myself, but respect the lads that have given him that mark. I thought it was a very, very weak Group 1, very winnable Group 1. They found him the absolute ideal opportunity. I've often described Hookham as a kind of Group 1.5 horse, one of those who falls just below Group 1 standard. But he's better than a Group 2 horse. And I thought that the Coronation Cup was a bit of a Group 1.5. There was a lot of very good horses in there. But I don't think Pile Driver is, you know, up to the absolute top standard. He's not in the level of Baid. And obviously, we're going to talk about Desert Crown and the absolute champions. I know that Hookham beat him very well. But yeah, lots of time for Hookham. Very, very solid horse. Consistent. A great mentality, settled very well, always finished his race off very strongly, stayed very well, and obviously a fantastic win record as well. I think he won, well, 9 of his 15 starts, it says here, so that must be right. So loads of time for him. Shame to see him go. I don't personally think he would have played a part in any of the big Group 1s coming up, so it might not be the end of the world for connections, but yeah, shame he's not coming back, of course.
And what about those in behind? You've touched upon Pile Driver briefly. High Definition Manobo, who was, again, keen and bumped just after the start, coming back down in trip. Would you sort of be holding a torch for any of those going forward?
Well, but Pile Driver's a very good, consistent horse, isn't he? But again, for me, I know he's won Group Ones, but for me, he just falls short of the very, very top grade. I mean, I have obviously very high standards. I compare, you know, champions with champions, and you know, for me, Piled Driver falls short of some of the absolute top middle distances horses that we've had in the past. But nevertheless, you know, he has run several consistent races at the top level and won his Group One. I think the third high definition is, you know, without doubt, a disappointing horse, isn't he? He was a short price favourite for the Derby over the winter a couple of years ago. He was well beaten by Hurricane Lane, well beaten when favourite for the Irish Derby, showed absolutely nothing after that. Keeps getting beaten in Group One, Group Twos, Group Threes. A big horse, probably wasn't suited by the track. Manobo, again, is a very decent horse, but he probably wants further. His best form's over mile six, mile seven, and he was done for pace, I thought. And then you look at the other two, Pallavicino and Living Legend. So it wasn't a strong Group One. I'll be very surprised if any of those in behind go on to win a Group One for the rest of the season over a mile and a half. Manobo might pick one up over further, but I don't think there's any future Group One winners in behind Hookham, that's for sure.
I think what you get, though, in Pile Drive, you get a really honest... He's very consistent. So I think he's probably... he usually runs up to his mark, which is probably why the ratings guys have decided, right, well, he's a 120 horse. He runs his race usually. The high definition was rated 119. I mean, could be open for some debate whether he's actually up to that. But he ran in behind quite closely. So I can see why Hookham did it quite nicely. I can see why the ratings guys have come to that conclusion.
It's a very difficult race to rate, isn't it, Parky? Because I think that they've rated Pile Driver to 117. So they've actually got him underperforming by quite some way, Pile Driver, and they've got a high definition underperforming as well. And the fact that Hookham still comes out with a high rating is because obviously he beat them so easily. I can see how they've got there. I'm not sure Hookham's 124, but okay. we'll never know now, will we?
Well, maybe we'll see. But understandably, you know, commercial obligations and it would be likely that it'd potentially be whisked off to stud now. Talking of potential future Group One performers, well, Tuesday won the Kazoo Oaks also on Friday, and she may well have just beaten another in Emily Upjohn. It's usually the end of races that we focus on, but the big thing with this race was the start. Both of them, in fairness, were slowly away, but Emily Upjohn stumbled, and most people are saying that that was the kiss of death on her chances. Of course, she was only just beaten in a photo finish at the line, was ahead just before and just after the line. So gutting if you were an Emily Upjohn supporter. Seems a silly question, but I'm not sure everyone would necessarily say it's a formality that she would have won if for that issue at the start. Graham, do you think she definitely would have done?
I do, yeah. I think she was very unlucky not to win Emily Upjohn. I think she's definitely the best horse in the race. I thought that... She obviously made a mess of the start, and then she came home very, very strongly. She finished quite a bit faster than the rest of the field, despite them going, apparently, according to the sectional, really no great pace. I mean, according to the sectionals that they show on racing TV, you know, they finished around about 120-odd%, which would suggest that they've gone very, very slowly and then sprinted up the straight. And the fact that Emily Upjohn has been able to come from last in what appears to have been, if these sectionals are right, a sprint finish, tells you an awful lot about not only the ability she's got, but also how unlucky she was not to win the race. I would be confident of Emily Upjohn beating all of these over a mile and a half next time. Having said that, I was very strong on Nashua. Definitely didn't stay the trip. I mean, she travelled very, very strongly through the race, and coming to two furlongs out, I was like, well, let this go, Holly, and she'll go and win, in the way that she really finished off well at Newbury, of course. But when Holly went for Nashua, she emptied very, very quickly. She definitely didn't get the extra two furlongs at Epsom. I think you'll almost certainly see her over a mile and a quarter next time. They were, of course, before this race, they were talking about going for the the French Oaks, weren't they, which would have been over a mile and a quarter. I reckon that she will run in the Nassau Stakes at Goodwood. That looks her race, and I think she'll win that. But, yeah, without doubt, the best horse on the day in the Kazoo Oaks didn't win it, and it was Emily Upjohn.
Okay. Tuesday did come from far back as well, though. I think Emily Upjohn was actually ahead of her in the run at various points, Parky, and it was her birthday. She turned 3 on Oaks Day. So how much improvement do you think there is from her, given that this was her, she's a full sister to Minding, and this was her first attempt at a mile and a half, having placed in both guineas?
You've hit the nail on the head, Maddie. My first reaction, I was on RP Live that day, and like G-Rod, I thought Emily Upjohn was extremely unlucky. However, after watching it back yesterday, Tuesday didn't have, she, as you quite rightly point out, she turned in more or less in the same kind of position in the field as Emily Upjohn. She's had to make up an awful lot of ground too. She's done it a different way. She's weaved a way through the traffic. And coming to the line, look, Emily Upjohn, she had a couple of lengths to make up inside the last furlong, and she all but made them up. I mean, it's only on the line, really, that she's been beaten. But as you rightly point out, Tuesday, she looks like she's got a bit more maturing to do. And I wouldn't categorically say that Emily Upjohn has her measure next time. I could see Tuesday definitely coming on for that when Emily Upjohn look to have a physical advantage over the field. She's big, a big filly. And, you know, she'll be big odds on in a rematch. And you know what O'Brien's like? He gets these horses developing later on in the three-year-old careers. I can just see Tuesday taking a big leap forward from that. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Emily Upjohn beats her. I could definitely see Tuesday improving. And if you're looking at markets like the Ark going forward, if backing a three-year-old filly is your kind of thing to do, I think I would rather be in the Tuesday camp than the Emily Upjohn.
That's a bold shout. Emily Upjohn was installed as the Ark favourite. That didn't last, of course. More of that in a moment. Graham, do you think that was an overreaction, or do you think that she really is that good? And what do you make of Parky's line of thinking?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Tuesday was a good winner, but she just had a better run through the race. I know she did come from, I know that they were about 2 furlongs out, Emily Upjohn was actually ahead of Tuesday, and Tuesday come from behind her, and then Emily Upjohn was catching her at the line again. But you know, I do refer back.
Emily Upjohn has gone. They started. They turned round and they started kind of in the same position, didn't they? Emily Upjohn's gone straight down the outside when Tuesday's kind of come back in and then had to kind of weave her way through the traffic. I'm not sure. I think Emily Upjohn has had to wait to kind of make a move, even though it was a clear run out. I'm not sure. I don't know. My initial reaction after the race was, oh, wow. Emily Upjohn's been unlucky, because your eyes were always drawn to her. Just watching it back, I just thought Tuesday, she had that turn of foot to get her out of trouble. So she was able to weave her way through.
Do you think she's more of a speed horse, Parker?
Yeah,
do you think that Tuesday's a bit more of a speed horse?
Point. Yeah, that was going to be my next point. Whether we actually see these two fillies against each other again, I just wonder whether they might drop back in trip with Tuesday to a mile and a quarter, because she did have to show a proper turn of foot. But then, look, she's seen out the trip well. I think if there was any sort of stamina doubts there, then she wouldn't have won. And they've drawn a long way clear of Nashwise, drawn a long way clear of Concert Hall. The form kind of looks like it's really stacked up well.
I think it's a lot better race than I thought it was going in. I mean, I thought that the fillies this year were not very good. I mean, I wrote the piece in a week or so ago saying that I thought that Nashua had only run the fifth best trial and that Emily Upjohn had only run the eighth or ninth. And I think that after this race, I think you have to revise your opinion and say that actually Emily Upjohn and and Tuesday are actually a lot closer to the Colts than I gave them credit for, I think.
Yeah.
I think Tuesday, she's definitely improved for every run as well. I mean, it's quite clear. Like, she ran well in the 1,000 guineas. I know she was beaten quite a long way in the Irish 1,000 guineas, but I think she was beaten by a potential superstar there over a trip that was a little bit short for her. And yeah, I mean, I could definitely see her. I'd love them to aim her at the arc, so we'll see where they go. But it wouldn't surprise me if they do drop back to a mile and a quarter in the build-up to the season. I'm not sure whether they'll go Irish Oaks with her or not. Just depends whether they want to take on Emily Upjohn again, I suppose.
Yeah, if you want the price for the arc for Tuesday, she is 12-1 with Boyle Sports, slightly bigger elsewhere. Seems like we have quite a high opinion of the Kazoo Oaks. We certainly, I'm sure, will have a high opinion of the Kazoo Derby. It was run in memory of Lester Piggott, of course, and it had a very fitting winner in the shape of the 5-2 favourite Desert Crown, the Dante winner. I think he was the 11th horse to win at York and then go on to win the Derby, the first since Golden Horn. He beat Huyamal, the 150-1 outsider, and the somewhat unlucky Westover, 25-1 back in third. But ultimately, this was a victory of real style, of real class. He was always prominent, and he just outspeeded them from 3-2 down, eventually winning by 2.5 lengths. How highly do you rate this horse now, Graham?
Yeah, I mean, he's very good, isn't he? Well done to you, Maddie. I think you highlighted him, didn't you, in your column at a big price before he won the Dante. So, yeah, all your followers must be in clover this weekend. But he was fantastic, wasn't he, Desert Crown? He was brilliant. You know, I thought that going down to the start, he sort of had his ears pricked almost as though he owned the race already. He's got that aura about him that special horses have, hasn't he? And he sweated up a little bit and he drifted a little bit as a result. But a lot of them did, didn't they? And he was dominant. He was dominant, wasn't he, Desert Crown? I've got him improving £6 on his... on his Dante run. I obviously had him quite high on the Dante run anyway. You can't win a derby any easier than that. That's how top classes all win derbies, isn't it? He was, you can say, well, Richard Kingscote got him into a great position. He did give him an excellent ride, but I'm sure Richard Kingscote would agree. It helps when you've got the horse there. And Desert Crown's got that ability to be able to travel well enough to hold a good position through the early part of the race, and then once coming to three furlongs out, I didn't think there was going to be any other winner once I saw him travelling as he did. And he was a lot better to on Saturday, wasn't he? I think Richard Kingscote described him as being a bit more push button than he was at York in the Dante, because when he won the Dante, it took him a little while to get going, and then when he hit full stride, he really went through the line strongly. This time, when Richard Kingscote shook the reins at him, he was skipped clear within 3 or 4 lengths in no time. And yeah, we're undoubtedly looking at a superstar of a derby winner, also that can go on and compete in all the top group ones and have a really good chance of winning them. And I just think everyone now is hoping that we will get to see the big clash between the two unbeaten champions, Baid and Desert Crown, over a mile and a quarter at some point this season. And it will be an absolutely fascinating race between the pair. And of course, Desert Crown will be getting a big weight for age allowance as the 3-year-old, and I'd be on his side, but I can't wait. I really hope it happens for racing, because we need it, don't we? The sport needs it. We need our big clashes. But yeah, this is a time when we need to be attracting fans to the sport. And if we can get an unbeaten derby winner against a horse like Baid, who is also unbeaten, what a showdown we will have, and what a way to sell the sport.
Couldn't agree more. Really, really excited about Desert Crown. You mentioned that Judmont International in the office this morning. That's been one of the talking points. Where will Desert Crown go next? Because he's entered in the Irish Champions Stakes. Some would say maybe that he doesn't need to win over a mile and a half in the Irish Derby and do that double. Of course, Sir Michael Stout did it with Shergar. Parky, where would you be looking at with him next? Would you bother winning another Group 1 over 12 furlongs in the Irish Derby? Or would you wait for the King George? Would you go back? He's not yet in the Eclipse, but he's going to have so many options now.
And Stout's, he's got a lot of history, hasn't he, with the King George? So I suspect that might be his target. I mean, it depends which way they want to kind of go with him. He's definitely got the speed for a mile two. I don't think that's in any question. I mean, the way he kind of took a pull, and I can absolutely understand where Richard Kingscote's coming from, where he's more push button, because I think he actually probably got to the front and kicked clear. Maybe he's a little bit too far out. I think he was probably expecting him to take a couple of strides to hit that top gear, but it was like within a second he was 3-4 lengths clear of the field. It was really...
Does the second place horse temper your enthusiasm? Does that bring down the level of form?
I've heard a lot of people crabbing. People are very quick to kind of do this kind of thing. This horse has won so easily. It's incredible how easy he's won. Now, what I would take, and it'll be interesting to get G-Rod, who's a bit more of a race kind of analysis than me. He's kind of kicked... They went strong gallop. He's kicked clear of them. A lot of the fancied horses have then had to go 2.5 furlongs out. They've had to really try and chase after the favourite, because you've got to, like... You can't just let the race go. Now, I think what's ended up happening is the stayers... kind of stayed on from behind. So I think Westover was definitely unlucky not to finish second. I don't think he'd have been winning. But he's definitely the one to take for the St. Ledger. I think the horses in behind have just really stayed on, which is why the likes of Stone Age, who's perhaps going to be better over a mile and a quarter, have not quite seen out the race. Some of the Godolphin horses, maybe... I don't think you can crab a winner when it's run at a pace and he's shown a turn of foot like that. I just don't think you can take enough away from Desert Crown. He was a really, really good Derby winner. And yeah, I suspect, I think he's definitely the one to beat this season. Whether we see the Baid race, that would be fantastic. The problem we've got is there are a lot of options open for both horses. So whether they are both going to want to meet on the Knaves Mirror and the Judmont, perhaps the best chance we'll get at seeing them. Baid could obviously just go on and dominate all the mile races, and Desert Crown's got options. I mean, he could stay again at mile 4, go King George.
Michael's dad's got Bay Bridge as well over 10 furlongs, hasn't he, of course?
Yeah, I think that will be the key. Although Bay Bridge before his Brigadier, I kind of thought he was going to be in a mile and a half horse for the season. But he looked very good in the Brigadier Gerard. So, yeah, well, fingers crossed we get to see it at York. I think it would be absolutely brilliant for racing. But whether it happens, I wouldn't be so sure.
Okay. 11 to
4. It's easy to avoid them these days.
Okay, 11 to 4 with Boar Sports for the Arc. Graham, we were talking about the form there. It'd be interesting to know what you think. But if there are people wanting to take this horse on, because there always are, he's likely to be a short price wherever he goes next now. What do you think are the things that they will need to latch onto?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were taking him on next time, then you'd be hoping that he doesn't improve further. Because, I mean, he's not... You see... When I've always got my own figures on these horses. So, if I say that I think, for example, that Desert Crown is better than Baid, it's because I've got him very close to him on my own figures that I've got. It's not just because I'm coming out with something out of the blue. And before the Derby, I did have Desert Crown very close to Baid on my figures, just purely on his Dante run. And on figures, I now have Emily Upjohn very, very close to Desert Crown, within £3 of him. And of course, let's not forget that Emily Upjohn will get £3 from him should they race. So I think he's an outstanding Derby winner, and he did it so impressively. But if you are taking him on next time, you're hoping that there's not more to come from him, because I think if he just runs to his Derby level next time out, he's eminently beatable. There's no doubt about it, because it was good, but Who Your Mal was second, and Westover would have given him a better run if he'd got through in third. He definitely would not have won Westover. He would have finished second. But, if you look at the sectionals of the race, Who Your Mal and Desert Crown actually ran the final 3 furlongs in exactly the same time. So he wasn't dominant from a sectional perspective, for all he was dominant to the eye. The worry, of course, if you are taking them on, is he's trained by Sir Michael Stout, who is famed for bringing horses along very, very slowly, and they very rarely peak on their second or third runs. And you would be thinking that there is a lot more to come from Desert Crown. Just look at what he's done with Bay Bridge and down the years, the horses that he's had come from handicaps, suddenly become top class Group One horses. You know, if this Desert Crown should, if he follows all of the Stout's previous years that we know from Stout, he should just get better and better and better with every run that he gets. You know, he's already at 124 RPR. There's every chance he can get to 130 if he keeps improving. That's the exciting thing about Desert Crown. It's not only what he's done already, but it's what we, I don't think we've seen the best of him. I'm absolutely convinced there is better to come. And he's very, very, very good already. So that is the scary thought if you want to take him on next time. I think he's probably got more improvement in him, for example, than Emily Upjohn, for all I think at the moment. There's probably not that much between them when you include the fillies allowance.
It's so exciting, isn't it? But we do have to get a move on because there's still plenty of ground to cover, and we're even going to get in a mention of Royal Ascot a bit later on in the show. Also at Epsom, though, T-Spirit won the Dash, an emotional victory for Adrian Nichols, his dad Dandy, won it five times, including when he was on board in 2002 with Rudy's Pet. T-Spirit blasted out and made most a good winner, albeit perhaps not on the figures. And also we had some good handicap performances and in the group races as well. Royal Champion, I thought, in the mile 2 furlong handicap was really impressive. And Bashkirova could go to Royal Ascot after winning the Group 3 Princess Elizabeth Stakes. Any horses for the tracker? Any performances that particularly caught your eye over the 2 days, Graham?
It was a strange sort of card before going into the Derby. I thought that that Bashkirova, they hammered that in the market as though she couldn't possibly get beat. Apparently before, when she was beaten at Goodwood by Mrs. Fitzherbert, who was quite strongly fancied to beat her, the jockey got off and said he thought that it would definitely improve for the run, Bashkirova. And there's no doubt about it, she's come on a ton, really, hasn't she, to win that race, because Mrs. Fitzherbert, who looked one of her biggest dangers, was absolutely well beaten at the finish. I didn't like the race, the Diomed Stakes. It was one of those races, I often refer to them, where the market tells you basically how the race is going to be run. There was only one horse in the race that everyone wanted, outside of Muta Sabet, of course, who was heavily backed to beat Modern News and didn't. That was Meg Allen, and sure enough, they jump off, and you know, the Frankie Dettori gets the easiest of easy leads in front, and you're not going to beat Frankie if you give him that much of an easy lead. And yeah, Meg Allen was just backed as though one or two people might have either worked out or known that Meg Allen was going to get the easy lead there. So I wasn't mad on that form. I was very disappointed with Modern News. T-Spirit was very fast, wasn't he? Very fast. He was drawn out in towards the middle and cut across really, really quickly. Now, he is only rated in the sort of early 80s, but he has won his last three races, and he is clearly a quick horse. And he's the sort of horse that Adrian Nichols' dad used to, you know, improve into listed and group class. So I'll be fascinated to see what they can do with T-Spirit going forward. But yeah, I wasn't taken by the undercard, Maddie, that's for sure.
Okay, what about you, Parky? Anything to add?
I thought a quality ran quite an eye-catching race in the Dash from a poor draw. I actually backed the second at a massive price. He was poorly drawn as well. I think you can probably take them two out of the race. The problem with Mountain Peak, he's quite consistent. I think I backed him solely on the basis that I thought he was kind of priced up because of his draw, and he's relatively consistent. He might just sneak a place. I actually thought he was going to win entering the last furlong, which was quite emotional. But I think them three, I think they'll be winning at handicaps at some places. I wouldn't surprise him, Mountain Peak, he maybe needs to get back down to this kind of mark, but I wouldn't be surprised if he crops up in one of something like the Port of maybe later in the season. I agree with G-Rod. It was a little bit yeah, the Princess of Elizabeth Stakes, I mean, the second completely blew the start, and I thought she was maybe's one. I think she'd beat the winner next time out. And yeah, look, you give Frankie a soft lead like they did, it turned into a little bit of a farce in the Diamond Stakes. So, yeah, that's my take, really.
Okay. The arc, I mentioned Desert Crown was 11-4 with Boyle Sports. Well, there's a horse that's been cut to as short as 5-1 for the race after his superb victory in the Prix de Jockey Club on Sunday. That horse's name is called Verdeni, and we'll be discussing him in just a moment.
The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Experience an epic Cheltenham on the Boyle Sports app with extra places and exclusive offers every day of the Cheltenham Festival. Boyle Sports, this is betting.
Welcome back to this Monday Postcast. We're reviewing an awesome weekend at Epsom, and Shanti wanted to get in on the action on Sunday as well with the Prix de Jockey Club. It was a very good supporting card, actually, with two horses on the undercard, Bequeiro, who won the Prix Royalmont, and Mare Australis winning the Grand Prix de Chantilly, both cut for the arc, 25-1 and 20-1, respectively. But they couldn't hold a candle to Verdeni, who was really impressive under Christophe Soumillon in the Prix de Jockey Club, a race that's produced the likes of Mishriff in recent years. How did this match up to recent performances that you've seen, Graham, because there was no chance of this going under the radar?
No, he was very, very good, Maddie, wasn't he, Verdeni? I think he needs soft ground, personally. And, of course, they had quite a bit of rain there, didn't they, at Shanty? But, yeah, I mean, he was absolutely dominant. El Bodegon was second. I don't think he's a champion. I think he was behind Desert Crown, was he not, at York? I'm not sure modern games would have been ideally suited by the ground, and he was also drawn very wide. So yeah, it's quite easy to forgive modern games that run, because it's probably actually quite a good run to finish third, given all the negatives that seem to be against him going into the race. So I was impressed by the winner. There's no doubt about it. He ran the final three furlongs more than a second faster than anything else, according to France Gallo. So, you know, that's a pretty smart performance. But I do think that he may be ground-dependent sort of horse. But we'll see. I mean, he's trained by Jean-Claude Rouget, and he's won loads of races. And obviously, Fab is the master out there in France. But there hasn't been anyone better than Jean-Claude Rouget in these types of races over the last few years, and certainly deserves some respect if he turns up for the Arc in a few months' time, isn't it now?
Yeah, he's also entered in the Irish Champion Stakes, so I wonder if there could be a potential clash with the Derby winner there. Interesting pedigree, given that he was Churchill's first Group 1 winner. Churchill, of course, who was a miler and a really quick horse at that, out of a Monson mare, so that's perhaps where the stamina comes from. Parky, I mean, Graham touched on it there, that he might have been flattered slightly by the draw. He was in 2, El Bodegon in 1, Modern Games 13. I thought Al Hakim back in 4th was quite unlucky. Anna Nesto actually in 5th, because they were drawn out in 11 and 14 and just ran on in the closing stages. How do you analyse a race like this? And would Verdeni be one who you'd be fearful of next time? Or do you think he just got circumstances in his favour?
I think the way sometimes it happened in the Derby, it happened here as well, where you just get the impression that this is a really top class horse. Just the way he did it was really, really good. I agree. I thought Al Hakim was probably the one to take out of the losers. Yeah, he got a terrible draw. Unlike Modern Games, who kind of manoeuvred his way to front, he had to sit out back, and he was kind of wide all the way. And he picked up well late on. Suspect going up in trip will help him. And yeah, maybe with a better draw, he'd come a little bit closer. But I was taken by the win, I have to say. I agree with G-Rod. I think he's going to need it a lot cutting the ground to be at his best. But he's probably going to get that Longchamp in October. If you are in a view to the Arc, I mean, that would be my one concern of anyone who is looking at Desert Crown for the Arc. I'm not 100% sure that he'd go there. I mean, he's kind of as we were just discussing, he's got a turn of foot. He could definitely drop back in trip. And if the ground was more suitable that Ascot the following week or was forecast to be, like I could see them kind of switching tack with him when I think the pre-latch triumph will definitely be the number one target for Bedini. But, you know, the quotes from John Cordrugier in the paper, in the build-up for the race, they really liked Al Hakim. I mean, they were comparing him to Sotsas, which is very high praise indeed for a horse who had only won a listed race coming into this. I could definitely see him getting a lot closer to Bedini next time. I wouldn't rule out him, like, certainly getting up to that standard, particularly at a mile and a half. So come Arc Week, I have no idea what price Al Hakim is, but he would probably be the one that would interest me if he was around the 16-20 to 1 mark.
We should probably say that Jean-Claude Rouget himself does say that, above all, Verdini is a good ground horse. So, you know, if you believe the trainer, then this horse doesn't need soft ground. He'll go on anything. And I think that he wants to go for the Irish champion. So maybe he won't end up over a mile and a half. It's fascinating, isn't it, Maddie?
It is, yeah. 33-1 for Al Hakim for the Ox. So that could be a long-range fancy. And Group 1 form to the fore in this. You know, El Bodegon won a Group 1 as a juvenile. Modern Games, of course, won the French 2000 Guineas. And Ernesto won a good race at Saint-Cloud as well before this. So very strong race, the Prix du Jockey Club. Can't wait to see how that form is going to tie in later on this season with the superstars that we saw at Epsom in Emily Upjohn and Desert Crown. Now, that's all for our review. Now we're going to look ahead. And although it's, you might think, quiet weekend this weekend, no, we're going to talk about Royal Ascot and get some all-important naps for you.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Royal Ascot is fast approaching, and we're going to get you some fancies for the excellent meeting anti-post from our experts. Good job we got Graham Rodway and Tom Park with us to discuss it. We're still a long way out, gents. A lot can change, but equally in the Group 1s, we have a rough idea of who's going to be turning up. Have you got any fancies for us? G-Rod, I'll go to you first. What's caught your eye?
Yeah, I've got absolutely loads. I really think that Tis Marvelous could win the King's Stand Stakes if he's a huge price. Yeah, I don't know why he's a huge price. All of his best forms at Ascot. He's got some really, really, really good figures on the 5 furlong track at Ascot. This race has been won by horses like Tis Marvelous in the past. Horses that maybe you didn't think were real proper Group 1 horses, and then they go and win it. And really, Ascot in this race, I think, course form, and it can mean a lot more than anything else. And he definitely needed the run first time out in the Palace House at Newmarket. He drifted like a barge, and he travelled beautifully, and then he blew up as though he was in need of the run. So I'm absolutely all over Tis Marvellous at a huge price for the King's Stand. The Hunt Cup, I fancy one ruler. It was a huge eye-catcher in the Victoria Cup. Got miles behind and absolutely flew home. In the other sprint, the Platinum Jubilee, I like Minzao. I think that he has been underrated when he finished third in the York race. Jim Crowley was at pains not to give him a hard race. Yeah, it was the last couple of furlongs, he was just hands and heels going, well, you know, this is only a prep run. It's all about Ascot. Again, that also has got Ascot form. He ran some good races, again, I think against Tis Marvelous last year, first time up, and then went on to finish third in the Group 1 there. At the end of the season. So, yeah, I mean, I can't wait for Royal Ascot, Maddie. I've already got all of my ducks in a row. I know what I'm going to back. I won't be changing my mind. I think Royal Scotsman will win the Coventry. I mean, I was at Goodwood when he won Royal Scotsman, the Paul and Ollie Cole horse. He is a very, very good horse. They can't get him off the bridle at home. I mean, you can throw your black beards and all your smart Aidan O'Brien horses at me if you want, but Paul and Ollie Cole, there weren't many better training two-year-old winners than Paul Cole in the 90s. I think there was one year where he won all the two-year-old races at Royal Ascot. He is absolutely superb with two-year-olds, and if he thinks this horse is top class, that's good enough for me. So that's just four fancies on an amazing week. Can't wait for it, Manny.
That Thank you very much. And Tom, you'll know that I'm a big fan of the horse that Graham mentioned for the Coventry there, Royal Scotsman. He received a mention in my Weekender column. So we're on the same page there. Who do you like?
Interesting, like one the same as Giron. I like Minzal too for the Platinum Jubilee. So fingers crossed, I'll run well for both of us. The other one that I like is in the Commonwealth Cup. I like a horse called Eras of Richard Hannans. Doesn't do an awful lot of winning, this horse, but he's got a big reputation. And he's obviously doing something at home, and he does it on the track. He's just for some reason not quite seeing out his races this year. But I think there's a big run coming from him, and he's around about the 12-16-1 mark, I think. Can definitely see him running well. And if you want in a surefire winner, Homeless Song should not be 6-4 for the career. That was an almighty performance in the Irish Guinea. She should definitely be odds on. I'll be absolutely stunned if she runs there and gets beat.
This will not be beaten.
So now it's time for the all-important naps. I'm looking forward to this. G-Rod, where are you going?
Yeah, I am going to my local track, Maddie, at Chelmsford. They race on Tuesday night at the 7:20. There's a horse called Sharp Cliff, who runs at Chelmsford in the 7:20, trained by John Mackey. He's absolutely flying along. This horse has won his last three, going for a four-timer. And I was very impressed with him when he won at the track last time out. Now, Chelmsford notoriously favours horses who race on the pace, but Sharp Cliff came from absolute last when he won over the course and distance last time and didn't get the cleanest of runs. He was in trouble a furlong out, but he flew home inside the final furlong to get up and win by a neck, but he was valued for a lot further than that. His previous two wins had come by 5.5 lengths and 3 lengths, and the fact that he only won by a neck means he's just gone up £4, because of course a handicapper can't hit him for such a narrow victory, but I guarantee you his value for more than that. I'll be very disappointed if he doesn't do the business. 7:20 Chelmsford Tuesday, Sharp Cliff.
Do you know, I watched that replay and I totally agree. It was super smooth and really impressive, wasn't it, from Sharp Cliff. Could be a horse on the up for John Mackey. Tom Park, who are you going with?
In the 145 at Haydock on Wednesday. William Buick's got a great book of rides at Haydock, so it wouldn't surprise me if he has a few winners that day. But this one can kick him off. It's a horse called Time Lock. Was really taken with him last time out. Won very comfortably for him. Well-backed Gosden horse, I think, in Atlantis. Won at Newmarket last time. Think that this horse will definitely improve for that. But it's a novice race. He ought to be winning this. There is a Gosden horse in the race who matches him on top speed anyway. But this horse is miles clear on RPR's rating. So if you're getting around the even money or shade of odds on, I would be looking about this time lock.
Fantastic. Thank you both very much for your contributions. Really enjoyed discussing the Derby Festival. We'll be back next time on Monday. But of course, before then, you'll have the lads and all their insight with the declarations for the weekend on Friday. We'll see you soon.